Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now let's go to Tom English of BBC Scotland. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
As well as can be expected, we are living through interesting times, unfortunately. And sport is coming to the realisation, I think, that it maybe had to come to a couple of days ago, but things are grinding to a halt. But we do have one Six Nations game, it seems. Is that in jeopardy?
There's absolutely zero talk about it, Joe, being in jeopardy. And it surprises me. I think it surprises a lot of people here in Scotland. But all the signs from the start of the week, I know there was a lot of rumour going around there that all the games were going to be called off and then there was going to be the Super Saturday on October 31st. The SRU were sending on a message that isn't going to happen, that all the advice from the chief medical officer was this game is going ahead. They were never in any doubt at any point this week that this game was going to be called off.
Okay. What about sport generally in Scotland?
It's funny, tonight there's a football match on in Paisley near Glasgow. It's St Mirren versus Hearts. It goes ahead, but St Mirren, the host club, have put out a message that anybody who's showing cold or flu-like symptoms won't be allowed in. So it seems to be a fairly bizarre way about it. You'd have thought that if they were sufficiently worried about letting people in who had a sniffle, that the game really should be called off. But it's going ahead. And Celtic and Rangers and Celtic are playing on Sunday. Once that game is over, Joe, it wouldn't surprise me if more immediate action was taken and maybe. Now, the SFA and the SPFL, the runners of the league here, are at pains to point out that this would be obviously the doomsday scenario. Mm. But this decision will be made above their heads.
And are there a team of nurses and doctors outside the stadium this evening in Paisley?
I would very much doubt it, unless they have stewards who actually their day job is doctors and nurses. I would doubt it. So if you're going into that game, if you've got a sniffle, get through the turnstile first before you sneeze.
So with the view to the tournament, if we take a broad view of where the weekend just gone leaves us and we make the most likely predictions, England will get to 18 points against Italy. Ireland, you would presume, will beat Italy with a bonus point and then probably succumb to France in Paris. France will get to 17 points, Ireland will get to 14. And that is England sitting pretty. And really, they've left behind a couple of bonus points anyway. So they should really have won this tournament quite comfortably. They are clearly the best team in the competition, Tom.
You'd probably have to say that. You know, they've done a number on... they've done a number on Ireland. They've done a number on Wales, despite the fact that the scoreline at the end was close. Mm. They battled through the most horrendous conditions I can ever remember a rugby match being played in Murrayfield, and they won that. They got found out in the first game against France. But the team that finishes top, Joe, deserves to win the championship, even if it is coached by Eddie Jones.
Yes. Well, we'll come to Eddie Jones in a few moments' time. So this weekend in Cardiff, as you said, it's not quite Super Saturday. 2002, the last time the Scots won in Cardiff. Time is ticking along. There is a bit more, and we touched on this last week, when we talked about the transition from trying to play the fastest tempo rugby, that was Gregor Townsend's stated aim, into being tougher to beat. And especially post-World Cup, just hanging on in games, not being out of a game after 20 minutes. Really, you would have to say, from their performance in Dublin, where they were clearly more up for the physical confrontation, this Scottish team has been less susceptible to being bullied, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, they've brought in some pretty robust characters. Loosehead prop Rory Sutherland, he's come from nowhere. He wasn't capped for 3.5 years before this Six Nations. And had went through awful injury problems. He's come in and he's been a revelation. He's been a really, really belligerent character in the front row. Xander Ferguson has upped his game massively on the other side of the scrum. Nick Haining, the number 8, started against Ireland, then dropped out of the team for the next two games and then started against France. A real pain in the backside. Hard, hard case. And then the two flankers alongside him, Jamie Ritchie and Hamish Watson. Tough boys. So There is a toughness in this pack that didn't really exist before. And there's any number of stats that kind of illustrate this. But you know, maybe one of the more telling ones was they've conceded 4 tries in their 4 games so far in against the same opposition in the Six Nations last year. They conceded 15 tries. Mm. So we're talking 4 tries now and 15 tries then. So the game they're playing is it's far more practical. It's far more pragmatic. The stuff that they were playing previously really was cloud cuckoo stuff. They were never going to win any championship or even contend for any championship playing that way.
Mm. 28-17 was the scoreline from the weekend, if anyone missed it. The Finn Russell scouting report clearly worked a treat. So was there much, in terms of the pressure on Townsend, given that they were at a point last week where they could pick Russell's brain on France, was there much pressure on Townsend in the build-up to the French game just to say, well, let's bring Russell back all the way, let's get him back in camp ASAP?
Yeah, there was a bit. There was a bit from the Townsend's critics certainly were saying, look, if he's coming back in the summer, which is the word, if the tour goes ahead, that's to South Africa and New Zealand, then why not just bring him back in now? And my information is that he was prepared to come back in for the France game, but that everyone, including him, in hindsight, thought that it might be a bit of a circus if he arrived back into the squad now, and it would be a bit unfair on Adam Hastings. And they've been very happy with Adam Hastings. So let's just park it for 2 games and then bring him back for the summer tour. And it turns out that was probably a wise decision, because it would have been a complete bun fight if Finn Russell appeared in the Scotland camp last week.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough. Well, the game itself, what did you make of France? Because it looked when they were, 7-6 something, they had weathered the cross sin binning, and they hadn't started well. They got the try, and then there's Mohamed Haas throwing the punch, has to get sent off. Jamie Ritchie somehow dodges any of that trouble, and Scotland are away. I was talking to Shane Horgan at the weekend. He was very much of the opinion that the game hinged on that sending off, whereas others were less sure, maybe felt Scotland could have won this game regardless.
Who knows? Sure. I mean, I wouldn't say it hinged on it, and I wouldn't say it did hinge on it. Nobody knows. What I do know is that Scotland looked to be the better side, even though they were trailing 7-6 before the red card. France had put together one attack and had scored from it. Scotland had most of the ball. France were unsettled. Scotland denied France the early start that they had in all 3 of their games so far. They were hassling them. They were putting them under pressure. France were doing things that they hadn't been doing. They were dropping balls. DuPont was dropping balls. Entomac was off the field, injured. So things weren't going their way. And they look rattled. You know, the big ball carriers from the back row weren't carrying ball. And the odd time that they did carry it, they got hit big time. And they spilled it. So it was a game where France... You could argue that the bounce of the ball favoured France in their first 3 games. You could say that things went against them. You know, they had their backup hooker injured in the warm up. Then they had Entomac injured after a very short space of time. Then they had the yellow card. All of those things were conspiring against them, whereas everything was falling their way in the first 3 games. So. And Scotland were up for it in a massive way. Murrayfield was up for it in a massive way. And France, really, they couldn't dig themselves out of a hole. A kind of proposition that they hadn't faced. They'd only been behind in their first 3 games. They'd only been behind for a total of 3 minutes. So they hadn't had to play catch-up rugby. They had to play it at Murrayfield and they couldn't do it.
Yes, it's true. It makes this Saturday a very interesting game, albeit with nothing on the line as such bar the pecking order. But Wales... against France showed a lot of resilience, ultimately lost. Against England showed a fair degree of resilience, ultimately lost. And so curious to see where they are now post Warren Gatland increasingly. And then Scotland go there. Yeah. This is a real litmus test of where Scotland are, because they should have won in Dublin in many respects.
Yeah, I think they should have won in Dublin. I think they probably left that behind them and they've got regrets over that. But they didn't. You know, the mantra for Scotland over the last 20 years could have, would have, should have, sure. But didn't. So it doesn't matter, they lost. Wales, I think, are interesting. If you look at Wales, on the face of it, they were close against England 33-30. But Wales scored 14 points while England were down to 13 men. Against France, again, it was a four-point game in the end. Wales scored 14 points while France were down to 14 men. Two separate sin binnings, they scored 7 points off each one. And Ireland, they scored 7 points when CJ Stander was in the bin. So they've scored more than 50 in the last three games. Forget about the Italy game. In their last three games, Wales, they've scored more than 50% of their points while having a numerical advantage. Now, that's not a good stat. I suppose it's a good stat in the sense that, you know, they're very good at taking advantage of a yellow card, and they have to do a lot to get the yellow card. Some of those yellow cards have come because of terrific Welsh pressure. But I think if Scotland can keep 15 men on the pitch and can get over this horrendous hoodoo that they have in Cardiff. They've lost 10 games in a row in Cardiff. If they can keep their heads, there's no reason why Scotland can't bring to an end this awful run.
Well, if they do, it puts a serious sheen on the championship for them, and Gregor Townsend suddenly looks like a man who has handled this crisis perfectly.
It does. Yeah, it does. It would be progress. I mean, I don't think anyone would be getting carried away.
Ah, the Scots would, Tom.
Joe, do you know what? I don't think they would. They might for a day, but then they'd come back down to it. They're a kind of a stoic race of people, and they've been battered down on the rugby side of things for 20 years. I mean, do you know when the last time Scotland won three games in a row in the championship?
Ooh, 99.
96. Now, that's a lot of years, and you don't develop too many years in graces when you haven't won three in a row in the championship for 24 years. A lot of realism there.
A lot of realism, too much realism. The Welsh, for their part, this is the first time since 2007 they have lost three Six Nations games on the bounce, i.e. the year before Warren Gatland arrived. So his credentials just go higher and higher, really, with the job he's done there. To cast our minds back for a moment, then, Andy Farrell now has to sit on the Twickenham defeat almost for a couple of months. Whether the Australian tour goes ahead, we don't know at this point. And then potentially, regardless, he's looking at South Africa, Japan, Australia in November, with Italy in the Six Nations in Dublin, France in Paris, potentially across five straight weeks, if the schedule allows. And world rankings are important here. Ireland could really do with staying in the top four. So I don't know. It's just a curious first season for Farrell in the job, in his first as head coach. It's hard to know if there's a major pro or con to any of it.
Yeah, it is. And to be honest, I mean, I'm watching from afar to an extent in terms of Andy Farrell, but look, I'm not pressing the panic button. I think I said it before. I think Ireland are in transition. I think Ireland have got fantastic players coming through that are not quite ready yet, but will be ready soon. I think every other country would really are envying Ireland's conveyor belt, particularly in back row forwards. I mean, it's just extraordinary. So I think maybe this is a period that Ireland have got to get through. For Farrell's point, every time I see him, for a legend of rugby, league and union, he doesn't inspire me with massive confidence. I don't know how it's being played out over there. He doesn't. Maybe we're just used to Joe and Joe being this extraordinarily together and confident coach. But Farrell strikes me as, is unconvincing the word? Maybe. I'd like to see some results to back up his credentials. I mean, his obvious credentials. He just doesn't strike me as a guy who's totally in control of it.
That's just based on his media performances in the main, Tom, is it?
Yeah, his media. I mean, I watch all the stuff. I read all the stuff. I'd like a little bit more assurance, a bit more Joe assurance from him.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of results, I mean, I think Ireland will be fine. We have over many, many years now, we have become accustomed to winning all around us. And now that maybe there might be a small bit of a lean period, people might be kind of losing the plot a small bit. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I just think that we have, there is a small transition here.
You know, I agree. And maybe to...
You know, at halfback particularly, yes. You know, halfback, there's definitely got to be a transition there. And I think quite soon. But you look at the rest of it, it's pretty decent in most positions.
Yes, and maybe to an extent, part of that transition is for Farrell to get more accustomed to doing more media and being the guy who has to think up answers on the spot that will be scrutinised and pored over for days to come. And I don't suspect he's used to that, and that's not easy. So I guess we all have to give him time, and I suspect you're of that opinion too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I listen to your programme all the time. I listen to other podcasts. I read all the papers, all the boys. I'm not sure there's another country in the world, rugby country in the world, where the game is analysed to such detail as Ireland. And it's phenomenal. I mean, the detail, the intelligence of the analysis is incredible. I don't think there's another country, and I include New Zealand in that, because the breadth of the coverage in Ireland is amazing. And there's so many opinions and so much thought and so many ideas that go into analysing this Irish team. I don't think any other country, including the All Blacks, get this.
It's fantastic to watch. It's fantastic to watch. I would say for the players, it increasingly feels like a fishbowl, but I agree with you. Yeah. The breadth of the coverage has multiplied, I don't know how many times over, in the last decade. Let's dumb down the coverage then. Eddie Jones.
Well, you're talking to the right man.
By that I mean Eddie Jones's comments post the Tuilagi tackle, the Joe Marler incident, of all of it, actually, in some respects, I could be argued out of this position, but in some respects, the most long-lasting damage, the most serious issue I would take from the weekend is Eddie Jones not just having the cop on to say, you know what, we can't have tackles like that in the game. I accept that. We got to stamp that out. Marler's moment of madness is idiocy, clearly, but it's not going to become a trend in the game. He'll get his ban, deservedly so. It's the Tuilagi one, actually, that as the days pass, I think, how did the game handle this? And the answer is not great.
Absolutely. And the thing that troubles me is that players can get sanctioned. Yellow card, red card, ban. Whereas coaches don't seem ever to get sanctioned. And Eddie Jones has crossed the line numerous times. And this, I think when he said that they were playing against 16 against 13, I think that was one of the worst comments I have heard from a rugby coach, possibly the worst I have ever heard. Because now he's saying that the referee was a cheat. Effectively, they're saying the referee cheated. I'm not sure. I haven't heard it said in such stark way before. Maybe it has been and I've missed it. But certainly he said it, and it was blatant and it was brazen. And there doesn't seem to be any charge against him. I mean, why? If a player gets a tackle wrong, he's going to get a card, or he might get a ban. And it could affect his place in the team, and it could affect his livelihood, his career. Whereas Eddie Jones seems to have carte blanche to mouth off left, right and centre, and nothing seems to happen to him. I mean, the game is not set up to punish him.
And in some respects, I found his response all the more confusing, because this was not a coach who had just lost, you know, and fuming and a sore loser, which I could understand a bit more. Or equally, this is not a coach who has a massive game next week or the week after and he will be without Manu Tuilagi for it. This guy had nothing to lose by just coming out and pouring a bit of coolant on the situation and saying, yeah, look, well, even if he said it disingenuously, even if he said, yeah, we're going to talk to Manu and we can't have that kind of tackle in the game. Instead, he's saying, yeah, you know, it's a joke, and Manu did everything that could be asked of him, you know, which is just willfully disingenuous.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And it's a stone cold red card. Some of the England players have said that it was a red card. Manu Tuilagi's reaction was that of a player who knew he'd got it wrong. You have all sorts of people saying it was a red card. And Eddie Jones, in his ivory tower, is making excuses. And I've kind of had enough of him. And he's fast turning into the kind of Donald Trump of rugby union, in that he can just come up with these outrageous things. And he says so many of them, you kind of struggle to keep track. And I think we should stop at this point and say, no, hang on a second. He's just accused the referee of bias here. We can't let this stand. We have to do something about this. But of course, rugby is, and the Six Nations and World Rugby are a bit craven here, and they won't do anything about it. If a player said something like that, they would probably get banned. But why should the guy in charge of the player get away with it?
As for Saturday, what chance do you give Scotland to wrap things up, Tom?
I give them... I think Wales will give them no chance.
That's what you were about to say.
No. I've been burned so many times, Joe, in predicting Scotland victories on the road that I've given up. I've given up. So I'm going to go Wales because Wales are desperate for... They're absolutely... To lose 4 out of 5
Yeah.
For Wales would be a nightmarish scenario, especially in front of their own people. So I think I give Wales the edge, but I give Scotland a chance. And if I was Welsh, I would be worried.
Okay, well, maybe the Wales' greater need might prevail and home advantage
might
as well.
Do. Yeah, might do.
Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in from BBC Scotland, Tom English. Thanks, Tom.
Cheers, Joe.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us, everyone in.
That worked out.